Welcome to Medicus, a student-run podcast about any and all things in the world of medicine. Follow along as we interview outstanding individuals about important topics in healthcare. Hi, guys, and welcome back to Medicus. Tonight, I am joined by a repeat guest, Dr. Cynthia Chow, to learn about her experience with a severe complication of pregnancy called placenta procreta. As a side note, if you're interested in learning about what an audiologist does, go back and listen to episode 119, where I interviewed Dr. Chow about her career as an audiologist. So welcome, Cindy. It's great to have you back.
Thank you for having me back.
Can you briefly reintroduce yourself to our listeners, touching on some of the more personal aspects that you think may be important to the story you are sharing today, such as maybe your age or any relevant health history?
Yeah, of course. So I am a 36-year-old female, half white, half Asian, in very good health. And when I say very good health, in 2019, I did a full Ironman. So I'm taking care of myself very well. And one of the things, just through everything that I've been through, I was always like, I've always been super healthy and cognizant of like, how do women die in childbirth these days, like with all the modern medicine in the world? And little did I know I'd be in for a front row ticket to that.
Yeah, no kidding. So this past year, you delivered a beautiful baby boy, but getting him into this world has been rather complicated. Can you share your pregnancy and delivery story with our listeners, just as much as you're willing to share?
Yeah, of course. And I'm always open to answering any questions you might have too, or anything along the way, because it was a very long journey with him. So my husband and I decided we wanted to have our two children as close in age together as possible, just so they could be better friends, hopefully. And we won't be chauffeurs to them to multiple schools and multiple sports, but just having them closer would make it, in theory, easy for us in the long run. But little did we know that part of that, well, most likely resulted in this high-risk pregnancy that we ended up with. But basically, when I first got pregnant, we were obviously very excited. And it was just like, okay, we're going to be having a baby. And he or she is going to be coming at the end of May, early June. And we're just happy. But very shortly afterwards, I started bleeding. And obviously, during the first trimester, there's a lot higher chance that you're going to miscarry. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, okay, this is a normal, natural thing. It happens. Like, my body detected something's wrong and it's aborting the baby. So I just kind of mentally took it as that. We called the OB and we're like, hey, we know it's early. It's only 6 weeks, but we were bleeding and I don't think I'm pregnant anymore. And they're like, well, still come in for your first ultrasound. We just want to make sure everything is progressing the way it should. We get to the ultrasound. And we were there at the 8 week one, and lo and behold, there's a heartbeat. And I was like, what? Like, you're happy. You think that you're going in for a miscarriage and then find out that you have a baby that's living in you. It's just like, oh, that was a wonderful surprise. But it was also just like, how did I have that pretty significant bleed 2 weeks ago? So that was just a whole mix of emotions. Like, how is this possible? Very different from my first child, where it was just like everything progressed as it should have. So yeah, then we just kind of went about life, but we were cautiously optimistic as I was still in the first trimester. But at 10 weeks, my husband and I, we were just watching a movie and I stood up to get off the couch and I gushed blood out. Like, I'm talking blood down, staining my jeans down to my knees, so much blood that I lost. And like, my heart just sank, and go to the bathroom and there was just blood everywhere. And I was like, there's no way. We definitely lost the baby now. So again, called the OB and they're like, come in tomorrow. So cleaned up. My husband got adult diapers. We were into the store. And you're just kind of just sad. And we go to the ultrasound appointment and lo and behold, there's a baby. His heartbeat's good. And he even waved at us.
Oh my gosh.
I was joking that he was giving us the middle finger. It was just like, okay, so we're still pregnant. This is just happening. But from then on out, I was always bleeding during the pregnancy, like sometimes more than others. I had one more big event like that. It was about 3 weeks later that happened. And it was so much, like I was pulling blood clots out of the toilet that were like the size of my hand. And I was literally going through them looking for a baby because I was just like, there's no way that I could still be pregnant. And it was just so surreal. But yeah, like I said, I had multiple bleeder events. I bled through essentially the whole pregnancy. It was old blood, brown blood, but sometimes it was bright red, fresh blood. It varied, but there was obviously some very significant bleeding as well. It's like, how do you live? How do you go about life? How do you go about work? And thankfully, I own my own practice. So it was kind of scheduling things around what I needed to do to take care of myself. But it was also, you can't just sit around on a couch all day doing nothing. So it was a really, really surreal time. But it wasn't until the 20-week anatomy ultrasound appointment where they were checking everything with the baby and he was developing and growing normally and he looked healthy and it was like, great. And then when they went to check the placenta, they're like, something's not right with it. And so at that point, we were referred to MFM, maternal fetal medicine, for specialized care. I also had with the, they knew I had placenta, no, they didn't know at the time I had placenta precreta, but I had a placenta previa, where the placenta actually blocks the opening of the cervix. So I wouldn't be able to have a natural birth, but little did we know that was just a very small thing in the grand scheme of things at that time.
Tip of the iceberg.
Oh, goodness. Yeah. So they're like, because you have placenta previa, if you have any fresh bleeding, you have to go in right away.
And when you say fresh, you mean like red?
Bright red. And it would be varying amounts. Like sometimes you just went to the bathroom and you noticed a little bit of blood. And sometimes I went to the bathroom and blood was like gushing out of me. Like it was incredibly variable. But yeah, it was the 20-week appointment where we were getting, I think we always knew something wasn't right or wasn't going the way we wanted it to, but it wasn't, we weren't referred on until we hit that 20-week mark. So yeah, they said to go in as soon as we had bright red bleeding, which happened 2 weeks after that appointment the first time. And of course it happens like 7 a.m. when we're trying to get our 1.5-year-old ready and get ready for the day. And then that happens. So we're trying to pawn her off on whoever we can get a hold of as we're trying to rush downtown and rush hour traffic to get to OB triage to see what's going on. My husband, of course, drove us down and we're both stressed. And we get there and I'm admitted right away and they bring me to the labor and delivery floor and I'm only at 22 weeks and they're just monitoring me. Everything's stable, but I just have the fresh bleeding. And then they're like, okay, we're going to admit you. That was kind of a curveball because it's like you don't think that you're going to be admitted to a hospital.
Yeah.
And that you can't leave. So my husband had to go back and forth to get me like toiletries, clothes, all those sorts of things while I just hung out at the hospital. And it was incredibly boring. But I was there for 3 nights and everything was stable. So then they're getting ready to discharge me. And then I had another fresh bleed literally as they were getting ready to discharge. Then they held me another night. Everything just stayed stable the whole time though, which was amazing. That's what you want. But you're also just like, what the heck? This sucks.
Totally.
So then I'd get discharged. I come back. We'd go about life as best that we could. And then another fresh bleed would happen. We'd do the whole song and dance again. I'd go down to the hospital. I knew to bring my laptop at that point because being in labor and delivery with nothing to do was just terrible on top of everything else.
Yeah, absolutely. Knowing you and the kind of energizer bunny that you are, I could imagine this being literal torture.
It was awful. And just sitting in the hospital being like, if I wasn't doing something, I was just thinking about like all the stuff that was going on to us.
Yeah.
And I had no control over it. And it just like almost, it creates a very stressful situation 100 times worse, just dwelling on it and thinking about all the different things that could happen. I needed something to focus on.
Well, and especially with you having, again, like a 1.5-year-old and running your own business, it'd be much different if you're an employee and you're just like, hey, I'm going to have to go to the hospital and check out, you know, things are getting taken care of at work here. And this is kind of up to you. So that could be really stressful in itself.
Yeah. So while we were at the hospital during, we had multiple instances of me having fresh bleeding, going in, staying for 3 nights, getting discharged, coming back, only to go back 2 days later. Like, it just, I called it circling the drain. And they even said, they're like, you're probably going to get admitted here for the long haul until you deliver. And I think it was the third or fourth time, I don't remember, that was the time where they're like, you're staying here now. And as much as I hated staying there, I felt safest. Like, yeah. I felt it was safe for me. I felt it was safe for my son. I think the first time, or it was the second time I was admitted, I don't remember, they did an ultrasound at Northwestern. And that's when I was diagnosed with the placenta procreta. So it was kind of like a whole crash course into what is this and how is this happening to us? So basically, placenta procreta is the most severe form of accreta. So backing up, when you look at what placenta accreta is, the placenta basically is not doing what it's supposed to. It's either attaching to the uterine wall, it's going through it, which is like the second most severe form, the increta. And then the percreta, it just eats its way through and it's like surrounding invading organs.
Wow.
And of course, I'm all about go big or go home. So we did the most severe form, the percreta. I was diagnosed with percreta pretty early on there. And they're like, yeah, we can see it's right next to your bladder. It's not invading it, but it's surrounding it. By the time we delivered, we knew it was everywhere, but thankfully it didn't invade everything. And I can talk a little bit more about that later. But yeah, I was diagnosed pretty early on with the percreta. And of course, you always look up what celebrities have this. And of course, it's a Kardashian who ended up with it. It was Kim Kardashian, actually. So she had placenta accreta, but she had the most mild form of it. So the placenta just kind of adhered to the uterine lining. And she described it as one of the most painful experiences ever because they had to basically scrape the placenta out after she gave birth.
Wow.
And that is why she used a surrogate for her subsequent pregnancies, because they said it could get more severe and life-threatening if she continued to have babies herself. So I'm like, of course, it's a Kardashian, but in a other way too, it's also good for them to like raise awareness for it as well, because accreta is rising, especially in the United States. They're estimating like 1-2% of all pregnancies now are a form of accreta, and a majority of them are the mild cases. The percreta is a lot more severe and a lot more rare, I guess you can say, but it's on the rise. And part of why it's on the rise is they're saying like advanced maternal age, I am a little bit older. And then just some of the risk factors, if you've had a previous C-section, I've had one with my first daughter. Then for some individuals, like if they've had other procedures, they can also be more at risk for developing accreta. So it is on the rise in the United States. Did not anticipate ever having a front row seat to such a life-threatening condition. So once I was admitted to the hospital, I was there for weeks. I think the longest stretch was like 3.5, almost 4 weeks. The goal is for me to hit 34 weeks. They did an MRI at 27 weeks just to check where the placenta was and what it was doing. And the MRI showed at the time that I was having organ invasion in the bladder. I mean, that it was around the uterus and working its way up. But the MRI was wrong, thankfully, because I didn't have bladder invasion. It was, they described it like peeling an orange off my bladder. Like it was adhered on and it was really tight, but they're like, it didn't invade. And I was like, oh, thank goodness. I was in a support group with other women who had accreta, and it was the percretas that were usually the most vocal in the group because obviously we were dealing with a lot more. There is another woman who delivered in Chicago and she ended up with the same diagnosis. She had placenta percreta, but her symptoms, everything were so different than mine. So it's crazy to think that we had the exact same diagnosis. She had one small bleed and they held her for 3 days and released her. And her small bleed was like at 22 or 23 weeks. She never had any of the big gush bleeds or anything like that. But her form of the percreta, she made it to 34 weeks, but it was so severe. She was having complications post-surgically. She like woke up on a vent. She had more blood transfusions than she could even count. She ended up having a stroke at one point. It was just insane. Her case was just so different than mine. But she, like I said, she delivered at 34 weeks. I delivered at 28 weeks and 6 days.
With you being in the hospital and everything going on all the time.
Yes, there was a lot going on, but nothing at the same time, because I literally just felt like a ticking time bomb. Like, when am I going to deliver? What's going to go down? How is this going to go down? And like I said, in my support group, all these individuals had the same diagnosis, but completely different reasons for how, like potentially why they had it. There's one woman, she never had a baby in her life, and she had placenta procreta and her uterus ruptured at 24 weeks.
Wow.
And it was completely undiagnosed. Like, she didn't have any warning signs at all. They said her placenta looked fine on her anatomy scan at 20 weeks. And then at 24 weeks, her uterus ruptured, and her baby both survived. It's just, like I said, it's surreal how we can all have the same thing, but have just completely different symptoms and things that happened. For me, I had a lot of active bleeding and ground bleeding or old blood, but I felt comforted staying at the hospital, as boring as it was, and made the most of it, I think. I tried to joke with the nurses and doctors, and I think they liked me. I hope so. I try to not be one of those overbearing patients, but I was also stressed at the same time. I was joking. They were talking about the surgery and what would happen. We originally intended to deliver at 34 weeks, but I was just having so many active bleeding events. Just with what the MRI was showing at 27 weeks, they're like, we're going to deliver at 32 weeks. And I'm like, okay. So we just kept moving up the due date. It ended up being an infection that took us out at 28 weeks and 6 days. So it's still surreal how quickly an infection can take you out. They did their checks at 10 o'clock at night. So I remember the nurse, her name was Katie. She was really bubbly and really nice. And she's taking all my vitals, mm-hmm. and everything looked great. And I'm like, awesome. Tuning in for the night. So go to bed shortly after that. And I woke up at 1 a.m. with some pressure in my abdominal cavity, had some bleeding. And I'm like, okay, I just don't feel right now. So I paged the nurse and she took my vitals, and my temperature was up. My blood pressure was high, but they stuck the monitors for the baby and he looked good. So at that point, they just paged the resident, and he was a second year. And he's like, okay, let's do some IV fluids and we'll check back in an hour. And I don't even think I made it an hour, but I was shaking nonstop. I think it was about a half hour later. But I remember looking at the page button, and it just took all of my mental concentration and energy to just hit that button. And then the nurse came back and saw I was shaking uncontrollably, and she called for the resident, and then they took me down to labor and delivery. They're like, I think you have an infection. We're bringing you down. It was probably around 1:32 in the morning that happened. And then they started calling people in because they're like, okay, we're going to deliver this baby today. And me being me and hanging out on labor and delivery for way more days than I can remember, I'm like, don't forget my laptop. But I actually did deliver that day, obviously. They brought me into this prep area and they're like, yep, we definitely have to deliver. You do have an infection. We don't know what, but your body's fighting it and your baby's fighting it. And I was just like, can we wait? I'd really like to hit 30 weeks, which is a week and a day away. I can push through this. This sucks, but I'll rally. And the doctor took my hand and just said, you're not going to be alive and your baby won't be alive if we wait another day. And I was like, well, what are we waiting for? Let's get the show on the road. Let's move it, people. But it's just being so goal oriented. I had this idea I'm going to make it to 32 weeks. The thought of not making it was just not even a thought that crossed my mind. So it was just so beyond my control. And to deliver at 28 weeks and 6 days is still really good. But I'm still I missed my goal. And it's fine. But it's just one of those things where I was in control of nothing. It was just a roller coaster ride, really.
I mean, it's really humbling, especially when you're generally a really healthy person, for you to have this idea that something that, again, is completely out of your control can kill you within maybe hours.
Yes.
It's kind of wild.
Yes, it's very surreal. And it's, like you said, it's very humbling. And I'll never after this year look at life the same way again. You just don't know. And like we were saying, I am still in good health. I still got 10 pounds of baby weight to lose, but I'm in very good health. For the delivery, what they usually do for the procreta cases is they, instead of going in and doing a horizontal incision, they do a vertical incision just so they can get the baby out quicker, safer. And then they can really get in there because the placenta is incredibly vascular. So they need to control the bleeding. So you run the risk of bleeding out, just being open and exposed for so long. You run the risk of infection, which I already had. Yeah, I was just like, great. One kid gave me the horizontal scar. The other one gave me the vertical one. But in total, I was looking at the surgical notes. There were like 28 people in the OR. So it was quite the party for both my son and I. I had an epidural first, and then they delivered him. He let out two small croaks, and then they took him away, and then they put me under for the surgery. And when I woke up, I was like, oh, I'm alive. This is great. Like, the case is managed well, your odds are good. But with the procreatives, they're just so all over the place where you just don't know, especially like within our support group, there are other women that didn't make it. And so it's scary because it's just like, what's my story going to be? And if I do survive, is there going to be any long-term consequences? So yeah, I just remember waking up and being like, I'm alive. My husband was there and I was in this just recovery pod. I guess you can say they wanted to see how I was doing. And they felt like I was doing a good job recovering. So then they sent me back to the regular recovery where after women give birth, they can go to this, I forgot what floor it is. I want to say like the 11th, 12th, and 13th floor. It's just a standard recovery room. But the issue is that I needed a little bit more post-op care than what a normal delivery was.
Sure.
The day I delivered, I lost a lot of blood. I think I lost like 2 liters, just shy of that. And didn't have any blood transfusions. I was very pale, but it wasn't until the next day that the blood loss really hit me. So my blood pressure tanked. I was essentially a ghost and I did need a transfusion then. And I just remember feeling really tired. My friend was with me at the time and we hit the page the nurse button. The nurses have other patients as well who have a normal delivery. I don't say normal, there are complications after that too, but I was a little bit more needy, I guess you can say. But we weren't getting the response that we needed. And I literally have my friend running out to go get help for me. So they got the transfusion and I came back pretty quickly after that. But then the infection came back and I came back with a vengeance. My temperature just shot up. So then they had to increase the antibiotics. So it was really the day after where it was a toll on my body where it was just like, oh shit. My husband's like, I left for 2 hours and this is what happens. So I didn't really have that on my radar either. I thought if anything was going to happen, it would happen during the surgery or the day of, not the day after. And I think a lot of other women who go through this type of surgery have the same feelings because they were like, yeah, it wasn't until like a day or two later where shit hit the fan. So once everything was like controlled, I was still able to get discharged about 4 days after the delivery. Which was,
that's pretty impressive.
That's what I was actually, again, scared to leave the hospital because I was like, is it safe for me to leave? And I've been there for like a month at that point. The thing that really got me out of the hospital, because it's hard because you still have to leave your child. But what got me out of the hospital was I hadn't seen my daughter for over a month at that point. So I'm like, I have to leave my son who we've been through the ringer together to finally go home to my daughter who I hadn't seen in almost a month. It was obviously an emotional roller coaster, but every NICU parent has to go through it, sadly. But I always had to tell myself too, like, I will be bringing a baby home with me. You do all the Googling while you're in the hospital and it's just like, okay, if I make it to 25 weeks, what are my baby's odds? 26 weeks and 28 weeks was really the big one that they're just like, yeah, 28 weeks, everything's formed. It just needs to develop outside of you. And I remember hitting 28 weeks and I did like a one woman conga line down the hospital hall. I'm like, I made it to 28 weeks and I'm like 32, here we come. And then I tripped shortly after, but at least I made it to the 28 weeks. But like I said, everything is beyond your control. And the hardest part is no two cases are the same. Everyone's stories that they post are just so different. It's like, how did we all have the same thing affect us?
Yeah, that's so fascinating. And how long was Chip in the hospital again?
He was in the hospital for 11 weeks, so 77 days. And every baby in the NICU is very different too. There is a girl next to us who was born at 29 weeks gestation, and she was out of there in like 5.5 weeks. And I was like, huh?
Oh, let me take my baby.
Yeah, I was joking because she was like, that girl just, she was just a one track mind. She's like, get me out of here. I'm like, that girl's going to be the next Allison Felix. Like, can I get her autograph or her little like footprint before she's out of here? It was just so, every case is so different.
Yeah, no kidding. So a couple of questions as you were telling me about what unfolded. Did they ever figure out what type of infection you had, what kind of bug it was, or is this a common thing that happens with placenta previa or procreta getting infection?
Yeah, so the infection is something that could happen with the accretas. They sent it out to a lab and they figured it out 4 days, 5 days later. They prescribed an antibiotic that like covers 99% of like the different bacteria, whatever is causing it. And thankfully I responded to the antibiotic, but they did pinpoint what it was. I couldn't tell you what it was. All I knew is they figured it out. And for some women, their waters break early. And then they ended up living at the hospital too. They're also more prone to infections as well. Like it's just with my active bleeding that was most likely the cause of the infection that took us out. But I didn't have that on my radar. And a lot of the individuals in our support group who had placenta procreta, only a handful had an infection take them out. It seems like a lot of them seem to go out either from uterine rupture or they made it to their anticipated delivery date and they had a planned C-section, not an emergency C-section like what I had.
Wow, interesting. And then for the procreta, what you were describing the anatomy of your procreta was, once they, you know, take out the baby, do they have to go and detach all the placenta from all the different organs or like what goes on with that?
Yeah. So they literally have trauma team there to go in and remove the placenta because it's so vascular and remove it from all the organs. And urology was there because the MRI did show bladder involvement, but it wasn't thankfully, but they were there trying to pull it all carefully away and trying to control the bleeding. From what I was told, they said it was everywhere. It attached to some things, but didn't invade anything. So I was like, thank goodness. But the other thing too is, I think I delivered at 28 weeks, 6 days. Every single day that I was pregnant, my son's odds were getting better in terms of his prognosis, but my odds were getting worse, or the complications for me, because of the placentas having more time to grow and do some damage in there.
What's the right time to balance the scales so that you're both okay?
I am not envious of MFM for having to make those decisions. Like that would just be so complicated across the board.
Yeah.
And I felt very comfortable with the doctors at Prentice. They've seen a number of those cases. I know some women, the support group I was in, they're like, I don't feel comfortable with my doctors. They're not even ordering an MRI to know the extent of the damage. They're just going in. And we all are like, advocate for yourself because this is your life. You kind of want to know like what to potentially expect when you're going in there. So the other woman who delivered in Chicago shortly after I did, she has had so many complications. My heart just goes out to her and it's, she carried to 34 weeks. And she even said, she's like, I should not have carried to 34 weeks. I should have been 32 or even earlier. But they're like, oh, it's fine. It's fine. And it wasn't fine. And she actually said some nurses visited her afterwards. And they're like, you had angels looking out for you in the OR. Like I said, every case is just so different. And two individuals can say, I had placenta procreta, but have completely different like symptoms, different surgical procedures, outcomes, OR time, whatever it might be. I think for my case, had I continued on with the pregnancy more, I would have had more complications beyond what we had. But obviously, we had to tap out.
Yeah. So can you discuss any postpartum challenges you and Chip have had as a result of this complicated pregnancy? I know you talked a little bit about the immediate, you know, you having to stay in the hospital a little bit longer because of the infection and obviously your son having to stay in the NICU. But can you talk about any other residual maybe things that are going on?
Yeah, that's a good question. So you would think with all the stuff that happened that I'd have a lot more complications. But the reality is I feel like the recovery was easier than my C-section with my daughter. So with the procreta, they almost need to do a hysterectomy. So I had everything removed except for the ovaries. So I still have my ovaries, but everything else was taken out. They said they could try to save my uterus if I wanted more children, but then that's the added risk. It's a huge risk. And I was like, two is fine with me. So
one, like you said, one of the complications is that if you were to have children again,
yes,
yourself, you run the risk of having this again. So really, is there benefit to keeping a uterus that's really non-functional?
Correct. And exactly. It's just, I don't want to have more complications or risk my life for a uterus that's non-functional or could put me in this predicament again. It's funny because there was a woman in my support group who was slightly, I don't want to say delusional, but she really wanted to keep her uterus and she had Procreta and she was seeing several experts. And while she was visiting one of the experts trying to get them to save her uterus ruptured while she was at that appointment. She had it delivered.
Oh my God.
And they did have to do a hysterectomy on her too. And she didn't say until afterwards, like, I didn't realize how unrealistic it was. She's just like, I'm just grateful to be alive. And that's pretty much the consensus. I think in some ways, having the Procreta, it's easier to detect because when you're looking at the placenta, and I don't know the specifics of this, but like my placenta was not really in the uterus. It was outside of the uterus. But I think for some individuals who have like, there's different forms of accreta, the increta, where it's the second most severe form, where it's more embedded in the uterus. I think that's in some ways just as life-threatening because it's embedded in the uterus. When they go to remove it, when they tug, it just creates a lot of bleeding. And usually in those cases, they're not prepared at all.
Right, because it's harder to detect, like you said. So they're like going in thinking this is going to be pretty normal. And then all of a sudden, a woman is hemorrhaging on the table.
Yes. So I think in some cases, that form is almost more dangerous in that they don't know that they have it. Whereas with the Procretas, a lot of people know that they have it before they deliver. So they're like, okay, what are we looking at here?
And the team can plan for it, which is critical.
Yes. Like I said, having a planned C-section is the ideal situation. We didn't get that. But it's still, to me, amazing how they were able to assemble so many people so quickly, have the OR time booked, and they're like, you're in. It's just like, wow, here we go. So they know what they're expecting. It's pretty rare for them not to know with the Procretas. Most of the time, they know about it in advance. The one case where the woman delivered at 24 weeks, they didn't, I think they would have figured it out on subsequent ultrasounds had she gotten there that something wasn't quite right and had been more prepared for it. But yeah, like I said, every case is just so different. I'm grateful I lived at the hospital. I absolutely hated it, but I don't think my son or I would be here if we weren't living there. And I don't want to say we had a mild form of Procreta. There's just no, like, it's, we had Procreta, but it wasn't as advanced because I was only at the 28, almost 29 weeks. Had we continued on to the 32 weeks, I think it would have been a lot more intense.
So in a way, the infection might have saved you. You never know.
Exactly. And I still wish to this day, I could have carried him a little bit longer because the other thing too, it's hard trying to watch your tiny baby in the NICU just be ventilated, struggle to breathe on a CPAP. And it really eats at you. Just like, if I would have carried you longer, you wouldn't have to be doing this. But we didn't have a choice. This was the cards we were dealt. And we are just very thankful that we've had the outcomes that we've had.
Yeah. And can you talk about how your son is doing these days?
He is doing wonderful. He is 6 months corrected, but he's technically like 8 and a half, almost 9 months.
So can you talk about what that means exactly, the corrected?
Yes. So he was born 11 weeks early, 11 weeks, one day early. And so if you were to look at developmental milestones for a baby, he's not meeting the 9 month milestones because he's not technically 9 months old. He's 6 months old because he came 11 weeks early. So when I'm out in public and people are like, oh, how old is your son? I usually just say 6 months because he technically is 6 months if he actually came on his due date.
Right.
but I don't usually like to say, oh yeah, he's technically 8.5 months, but we need to back this up. And then it's just a long conversation. So it's just easier to say 6 months. But he's doing really well. He just started Solid Foods. He's a typical baby. He's a very happy baby. He has belly laughs, which are the best. He's super giggly and smiley. The night shift is a little rough, but every time I hold him, it's like with my daughter, everything was expected with her. I'm like, okay, we're going to get a baby at the end of this. My pregnancy with him, I never knew if we'd have a baby at the end. So with him, as tired as I am with him, I'm just so grateful to just be holding him. But yeah, right now I think he's teething, so he's kind of kicking our butts at night, which sucks, but it's okay.
But it's part of what's to be expected, right? Which is nice in contrast to what you've been experiencing.
Oh, yeah. And like I said, I'm just so grateful we took our baby home.
Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing your story. To wrap up, I just wanted to ask if you have any words of advice for women who may be diagnosed with placenta previa, creta, or procreta.
So words of advice is every story is different. Trust your gut. Advocate for yourself. And if you're not happy with the answers that you're getting from your MFM team, go somewhere else, because it's your life and your child's life. And you want to make sure that you have the best care and care that you're comfortable with. And just from other women in our support group and just talking, like, some women never have an MRI done. Northwestern scheduled me for another MRI, which we never made it to, but they're like, we're going to go in knowing what we're going to kind of have a roadmap of what to expect. And that made me feel really good. Whereas some other women, they just didn't have that. And they were upset and terrified. And it was just like, advocate for yourself, push for it, because you want them going in knowing what to expect, or at least having a plan. So that would be my advice. Just know you'll get to the other side of this. There is an end date. This isn't going to last forever. And that was one thing that really helped me. It was just so mentally exhausting having this diagnosis, but knowing by the time my son is born, we'll be through this. This isn't going to last us for years.
Right. Thank you. And what would you like the current and future healthcare providers to take away from your experience to better serve future patients?
I think for the future healthcare providers is just recognize that every case is so different. And so just because someone doesn't have symptoms doesn't mean that they don't have it. We knew very early on just something wasn't normal, but for a lot of people, they never had any bleeding at all. And they had some very, very severe cases of it as well. So just recognize that every case is different. My husband and I were told after our first C-section to wait 9 months to start trying again. What I wish I would have been told is to wait a year. Because I think there had been less of a chance that this would have happened to us. And I was reading, like, some women were advised after C-section to wait 1 year. There doesn't really seem to be a standard, you should wait a year or whatever. Just everyone kind of has their own, like, oh, wait 9 months, wait a year. And I think it should be a year, because I think we could have avoided this altogether. And we were following the doctor's advice, like, okay, we're going to wait 9 months. And at 9 months, we started trying, got pregnant right away. So I'd say waiting a year would be recommended as well. And who knows, it could have happened to us even if we waited a year, but I think our odds would have been lower as well.
Well, thank you again for coming on and sharing this very personal journey. I really think that it will enlighten a lot of our listeners, make them more aware of this condition and how truly every case is different.
Yeah, so thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to this episode. This wouldn't be possible without the support from our listeners. Please rate, review, and subscribe. We appreciate donations to help fund the production of this podcast. To support us, go to medicuspodcast.com, where you can additionally find show notes, links, and information about our guests. We are at Medicus Podcast on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. If you have any questions, comments, or episode suggestions, please submit them on our website. This podcast is intended for general information purposes only and does not constitute the practice of medicine. No patient-doctor relation is formed, and the content of this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Views and opinions are their own and do not represent any organization.